live. We're live. We're early. It's 9:11. Oh my God. Of course it's us. It's the Supernatural Substation, everybody. It's Friday night in New Orleans, and you are listening to the Supernatural Substation on the United Public Radio Network and iHeartRadio Partner, which I usually say at the end, but I'm being distracted. I'm your host, Ellen Pistanio, and with me, thank God, is Bernadine LeBlanc.
Hey, everybody.
Listen to her trying to sound all demure.
Oh, hope everybody's ready for Halloween.
Halloween, yeah.
We're ready for Halloween in January, so I don't know about other people.
Or, yeah, we're ready for it like on November 1st. You know, this is Halloween, it goes only 365 days. I guess, you know, I mean, I got decorations out, but nobody comes trick-or-treating, and I have no plans. I'm turn out the lights and watch TV and wait for grandkids.
You decorate.
A little bit, yeah, but, you know, not like I used to. I used to have trick-or-treaters come, but, you know, now it's like all these big sort of organized party things, you know, that they do at like parks and, you know, that they put on for a whole bunch of people. They just basically, a lot of people take their kids to those. You know, I mean, one year, a couple of years ago, and we thought it was the most kiddified neighborhood that we were staying in at the time. We made all these little bags and everything, and we gave away five. We ended up going to the fire department, the state police department, and the local police department and giving away candy to them. We ended up giving it away to, you know, law enforcement and first responders. So it's like, no, my lights are out on Halloween.
Well, people have to be careful these days. So, I mean, I guess the churches here, they do a lot of activities for the kids.
Yeah.
Vermilionville, and they do have safe spots. And the mall also gives out candy.
Yeah, they got the Monster Mash over here, the Boo at the Zoo and all, you know, so I remember having a young kid, and it was easy to just take him there and have a bunch of stuff to do, you know, but then we always went out on Halloween. So, I all the while I was taking her out, I was like, well, you know, I can't wait till I can, you know, stay home and give out candy. And then nobody comes. So I'm like, oh, okay. All right. So at least the candy won't be in my house. But, you know, that it's just all the traditions. And now there's some idiots out there with a petition to try and make Halloween the last Saturday in October officially. Like, who's going to officially that? Okay. I'm like, you morons. To some people, it's a religious holiday. Okay. To pagans and Wiccans and some other people out there, it's a religious celebration for them. So you can't just make it the last Saturday because it's inconvenient for you, you know, for your little, you know, yuppie, whatever, you know, overbook, overscheduled children to make it, you know. So yeah, I hope that just dies the death that it should. It's some kind of petition on change.org, and it should die a terrible death.
I know. I heard, I don't know if it's a rumor, but somebody told me a couple of days ago that this year they're going to stop the time change. I'm like, okay.
What? Who said that?
I don't remember. They stop, said yes.
You mean stop going back and forth, or go back to just real time?
Like real time.
The government's actually talking about doing that.
That's what I thought.
What, leaving it permanent daylight saving time? Joe? No, he just drops in like Gazoo and just tells us stuff. So he's now ghosting. I'll never know the answer to the other half of the question. You know?
Yeah, that's what I heard, that they were just going to stop the time change altogether.
And just go to real time, right?
Real time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that'll work. I'm a fan of real time, you know, because the seasons change. I'm a fan of that. I don't need that extra hour. All that crap, you know, it's like, oh, let's give them an extra hour to play outside. Are you kidding? Really? Who's playing outside, right? I mean, at 8 o'clock at night, you know, truants, mm-hmm. That's who's playing outside. Juvenile delinquents, you know, it's like they don't need an extra hour to do whatever, you know. And then, I mean, just leave it to be real time, because there are places there are states that don't observe it, and there are countries that don't observe that. So you get all this hokey, you know, whatever. It's globalism. They just want us all to be on the same time eventually, so they can watch us all at the same time. So, but anyway, no Pete tonight. And yeah, believe me, there's a guest in the future here. Okay. Yes, we have a guest, and her name is Deborah J. Hughes. She is a paranormal mysteries author. She'll be joining us around 9:30 in about 15 minutes. So stay tuned. And this is, I'm told, her first time as a guest on a radio show. So let's make it count. Anyway, so do you
I told her no pressure.
Don't worry about it. Yeah. This show could go anywhere. You know, we could end up exchanging recipes or kicking cats out of the room. Or I wanted to ask you, though, do you have your colored eyes in?
Not yet.
Well, you're not riding around town with them?
Well, they're in storage. Everything's in storage.
Oh, by the time you get it out, Halloween's going to be over.
I know. And I usually wear them like October 1st just
how
to
could they be
scare
in storage?
People.
Yeah.
Everything's in storage. I didn't even bring winter clothes out. Like when I left, I thought because it was so hot, I'm like, oh, spring's not good. Because normally spring doesn't get cold this early in Louisiana.
Spring, you mean autumn or whatever?
I mean, fall.
Jesus, so I'm like, no, wrong. Like spring, you just skip two seasons. And we just went through summer. So, I understand what you're saying. It's like summer will not die here.
Yeah, we wear shorts in December here. So I thought, I don't need a jacket. And, you know, I bought flip-flops and shorts and stuff.
And then they pulled a fast one on you and a front came through. One front. You know, it's like, we had a front. It might be 57 degrees tonight or something here.
80 and then tomorrow.
It's going to be 84. Yeah, and then it's going to be 80. And then you're going to have like 2 days of freezing, not freezing, but you know, you're really cold and you got the people that run around with the hoodies and all, and then it's gonna be like 80 something. I really don't even know what the mean temperature, like the mean average baseline is for this place that I live in, but I do know that in August and autumn and winter, I hate living in Louisiana. I hate it. We don't get any color. We don't get any consistent weather. We don't get enough gray days. We don't get any winter. You know, we didn't even get October this year, which is usually the good month, right? So it'll be like February, it'll be 90 degrees, and then May will be freezing, you know. And no, it's not global warming, okay? It's just not global warming. It's the changing cycles of the earth, which have been changing since the earth existed. So I don't want to hear global warming bullshit because.
And you know what's confusing, like really bad? I don't know if it's just Louisiana they do this, but I'll see people with hoodies and hats and earmuffs and shorts and flip-flops.
Do they look?
That
this
confuses
this has
me.
Been a pet peeve of mine for a long time, okay? And I began observing this in when my daughter was in school. You'd see these idiotic kids, you know, it's like a really cold morning. We're talking December. January or something, when we really do get that damp cold that can kill you, you know, and they're out there in shorts with a little jacket and a t-shirt on and those socks that just go to the top of the shoes that don't come up your leg at all. And their hands are stuffed in their pockets and they're freaking out, you know, and they rush in to get to school. I'm like, do you not watch the weather? Do you realize how stupid you actually look out here when everybody else who watch the weather or whose parents actually give a damn told them take a jacket and wear some long pants, right? This has been a pet peeve of mine for a long time, you know, and there's always some big idiot dude who's, you know, got the Margaritaville t-shirt and the, you know, the Hawaiian open whatever with the Birkenstocks and you know the cargo shorts, and it's like 32 degrees. I'm like, you just because you live down here, you idiot, it does actually get cold here, you know, like after Christmas. January, February is our coldest month usually. It hasn't been the past couple of years, but when it gets cold, it's that damp, that invasive sort of, it's that damp where it gets in your lungs and it crawls.
Pneumonia cold.
Yeah, it gets into your bones cold. It's not a long stretch of it, but when it gets cold, it does get that kind of cold. And the only other place I've experienced that kind of cold that we get here was when I was in England a couple of times on a couple of trips. And, you know, I knew what it meant when they said the cold, you know, the cold just creeps up your bones there. So we get that. And then you got these clowns out here, you know, who can't wait for the cubes to come out for the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival. You know, they're already planning with their freaking Panama hat and all this other stuff. You know, I look at them, I'm like, well, you just die. You know, I mean, I hope you get pneumonia this year and die. You know, so I mean, it's really, you know, and I'm sure your kids are at school shivering right now. They got a hoodie. Hoodies became popular. I don't understand why. I look at these. I saw a kid a few weeks ago when the heat index, this must have been in August, okay, but still a few weeks ago too, heat index, right? 90, it's 90 something degrees, the heat index 103, and he's walking home with a hoodie and shorts and the whole other thing, but a hoodie with the hood up and zipped up. Mm-hmm. Either you're a criminal, you're a drug dealer, you're an idiot, you know, or.
And you're going to die of suffocation.
Heat, right. You're going to go into heat.
You're holding the heat inside
exactly.
of.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's like pass out on the street and they'd be like, what's wrong with that person?
Well, yeah. I mean, a hoodie in August in Louisiana, anywhere.
Dehydrate you.
In New Orleans. I mean, you're keeping all that heat in from the top of your head. Your head, top of your head is where, you know, that escapes. That's why you wear hats in the winter and you wear nothing in the summer unless it's like a cool straw hat or something. I'm like, where, you know, so I'm like, okay, so, well, you know, I'll give you, maybe you're not that stupid, but you're probably a criminal. I mean, but really, you know, you're walking around 100 degree heat with a hoodie. Down here, you're probably packing a gun. Or at least you got one hand inside your hoodie holding your pants up and the other hand holding the gun. Okay, that's New Orleans for you. So, you know, that's it. You're wearing a hoodie, you're up to no good. So, and NOPD do it because they don't care. Not our problem, dude. Oh, did you hear about the Hard Rock Hotel crash down?
I heard.
Well, you know, like I said, like I've been saying for a while, New Orleans is cursed. New Orleans took away its protection, tore it down, and ever since April, May of 2017, this has been nothing but disasters down here. Crime is completely out of control. And now this collapsed, and I mean, it could have taken out every building around it. There was serious construction. Whoever the construction company is going to get sued out of business because at least one guy, the older guy, the grandfather that was there, he was a legal worker, right? He worked for whatever company, but that family should sue all the way down a line because now they've got evidence coming out of, you know, shabby construction practices, you know, nothing was OSHA approved and all that. I mean, if I was a lawyer, I'd lawyer up, or if I was them, I'd lawyer up and just sue them all the way back as far as I could go. You know, that's a big lawsuit. Some of them were not legal workers, so there's no recourse for their families. They were killed in the crash, and a couple of them they haven't even found yet because it's not safe to go in. But, you know, New Orleans wonders. We just had an election. I mean, I'm not going to bring politics 100% into it, but New Orleans wanted more money. Just last week when we went to an election, they wanted more money. They wanted the state to give them more money. They can't manage a cat litter box and we're going to give them more money. Yeah, it was a resounding like 70-something%. No, we're not giving you any more money to put in your damn pockets while this kind of crap is happening. You know, it's because they put money in their pockets. They cut corners. That's why New Orleans flooded during Katrina, because Ray Nagin was padding all his friends' pockets and putting money into his pockets.
Corners.
I mean, they act like it's a Zulu parade 365, 24/7. You know, like they'd a big shot in a Zulu parade. I'm going to stick all the money in our pockets, you know. That's how come that happened. It wasn't the government's fault. It wasn't the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers' fault. They were supposed to, the city was obligated to maintain. So there's your little note. So I'm not surprised now that things are, they've been having sinkholes, water mains breaking, and it's been a lot with water. And we had a guest on the show, the guy that did the spirit sculptures or whatever. And we talked about the talismans and related to statues and things like that being removed. They pulled one specifically down, who happened to be the man who originally designed the sewers and drainage of the city. And then that was PGT Beauregard. And he quit because there was too much corruption. And that was in 18, whatever, after the Civil War. But he was the original, he set out the original plans. It just seemed, you know, it's just like, this is, doesn't seem like anything now. It's, they pulled him down and it's been nothing but water problems. They boil water every other two times a week. It's like, you know, they ought to open a casino and take bets on where it's going to be, or throw darts on a board or something. It's just, New Orleans is just totally just gone. Just, you know, and you get all these people, oh, it's so beautiful. We're coming in. No, it isn't. It's not. It's not anymore, you know. So I mean, I even can't even write about it. I find it, you know, I have a bunch of stories. I have a lot of stories based in New Orleans, because of Haunting Tales of Old New Orleans. And I can't even write about it. I can't even finish those stories. That's how far they are off the path with history right now. So when I finally didn't write that, you know, I finally put it aside, actually freed me up to write other stuff. So like the nonfiction stuff that I'm going to be doing about my own experiences. But no, you coming down here, think about it. Think about
hard.
It. Yeah. It's the curse of the little Creole. That's what they called him. The curse of the little, and they took down, you know, I mean, this is a magical city and everything in it is part of the magical fabric. And they just, you know, they just tore it up. Mm. And they want to be reelected. So no, no. But anyway, that's the guy that, getting back to the Hard Rock thing, we did have the chief of the fire department come in there and say, well, you know, we have to worry about, you know, we have concerns about how to pull it down because there's so much fragile piping and everything underneath it that's like 300 years old. And I was like, uh-huh. It's 300-year-old piping beneath the streets. That's why, you know, it's like collapsing. So he's like, now he's worried about the French Quarter falling into a big sinkhole because this hotel collapsed. I don't know. But there's some more ghosts for our city.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. More to talk about. But they will have, they're having Halloween. I was checking to see if our guest was in the queue. I saw Anne Rice's ball coming out, and it's called Blood Communion. Okay. Blood Communion. What was it last year? One year it was Atlantis. Like he went to Atlantis. It's like,
it the year that we went?
I don't remember.
Don't remember.
It's almost like Where's Waldo or Find Curious George or something, where Curious George and Atlantis, you know, it's like Lestat goes to ... It's like a travelogue series, you know. Well, I don't know, some kind of blood communion going on. So, but I'm not going. So that's happening. And I did run into one of the planners for it at the Japan Fest last weekend, where there was nobody from Japan, no real Japanese people. It's been quite a week, folks. And I was puzzled. But then what was she? Yeah, I ran into this lady, Mary, and she said that they, rather than be on the Friday before Halloween, it's actually on the Saturday, the same night as Endless Nights. And I'm like, oh. And she's like, yeah. And I'm like, oh. And we're like, oh, getting pretty audacious there, huh? It's like
competition.
It's drawn a line. And they have the Witch's Ball, too. I don't know what night that is on, but then there's that. All of which is, but the tickets are $250 to Blood Communion.
My goodness.
Think about your experience there, Bernadine. would you pay $250 to do that
no.
again?
No.
I mean,
look how far
being able to go and all,
we were away from Anne Rice.
Yeah, and no. Well,
like,
I mean, not
her from
to
a
say
distance.
That far. I was like, are you in line to see her? I'm like, no, I'm not in line. I'm in
and
line,
the line was
for the
long.
Drinks and the hors d'oeuvres. I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm not in line. Go get in it. But, you know, and there was questions back and forth on some board about whether she'll be there or not. And they said she stopped. She stopped going. She's not like, she's not a spring chicken anymore. I don't even really know how old she is. But I know, you know, she's got to be getting up there. And I know that she suffered from diabetes, which I think she got all that under control and all. So, you know, she might be curtailing some of her public appearances. And when she goes there, she's like there at like 9 o'clock. So it's none of this fashionably late stuff. If you come late to, you know, like within later, like 9:30, you're waiting in that line to meet her or get autographs or whatever, you know, and then she's gone. So none of that. We're going to arrive fashionably late. You're going to miss Anne Rice. But, you know, so I just don't know. Blood communion. I mean, what kind of a costume would you do with that? Okay. I just had it. The grouping these people together to do like these 1 and 2 hour shows, probably just for Halloween, you know, or just for the month of Halloween. So I don't even really know where they were. But Katrina was saying something to Jack about, if you don't believe in those religious objects or whatever, you know, they're not going to protect you. If you do, they will, you know. All right, hang on a second. I'm reading my messages. Let's see.
Hello.
There you are.
Hey.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
We're fine. I would hate for this to be your first experience on a radio show and we don't do technical right, you know, so we don't call you at all or we don't, you know, whatever. So I'm glad. I was watching. I was waiting for you to pop up in the queue. I know you've been talking to Bernadina back and forth a little bit. I'm Aileen Pestanio and mm-hmm. Bernadine's with me on the show. And this
hello.
This is Deborah Hughes. And she is you know, I wrote in the ad that you were a paranormal and romance author, but I think paranormal mysteries is how you describe yourself on your Facebook page. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go with that. She is a writer of paranormal mysteries, and that's a wide expanse. So welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate you asking me to do this, and I feel very honored.
Oh, thank you so much for agreeing to be on. We usually have another host, Pete Haviland. He couldn't make it, but there's a definite opportunity at the end of the show. We always invite people back. So like when you have a new book out, yeah, every time you've got a book or whatever, you get in touch with Bernadine and we just put you on. So we're just real easy going like that. Some people don't like to invite people back too much, but we love it. And we have a favorite, you know, a group of favorites that we love to have come back over and over again. So I was looking at your bio on Facebook, and mm-hmm. like me and like Bernadine, you it seems like you started having experiences with the supernatural early. So what we will do, instead of me just reading from your bio, why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself, how that started and how you kind of got to where you are, how you got started to getting where you are.
It's such a long story. I mean, I'm, you know, that's a long time, but I'll try to sum it up. I'm a writer and I like to talk
cliff
a lot.
Notes.
So
yeah, the cliff
very
notes.
Hard for me to summarize. But I grew up in Bucksport, Maine, which, by the way, I'm not sure how many people know this, but Bucksport was the inspiration for the soap opera Dark Shadows, which I used to watch when I was really little. Haunted little town. And matter of fact, they're having Ghost Sport tomorrow, and I'm going to be going to that as well. But I grew up there and in Bucksport, Orland area. And when I was 7, we moved into an old farmhouse, a very old farmhouse, and it was very haunted. And as time went on, we started realizing something wasn't right with that place, almost right from the get-go, especially when there was a tomb behind the house with 12 people buried in it. And we learned that all of them had died in the house or on the property. So there was a lot of history there.
Sounds exactly like Dark Shadows. That's a dark shadow.
Yeah.
The
and
family
so,
too.
Yeah, it was a very, very scary haunted old house. And we lived there for 7 years. And then my dad didn't believe in ghosts at first, but towards the end, he believed in them. And once he decided that we had ghosts living with us. He made us, we moved out, and we moved 2 whole miles up the road. And they followed us. Uh-huh. So it didn't do any good to you can't run away from a ghost. So anyway, that's how I got interested in the paranormal. My mother and I we got involved with the Ouija board, which I know has got a lot of negativity about that, but we learned a lot of information about the spirits that were living in that house, and we're able to look up some of that stuff later on in historical documents. But eventually my dad took that away from us and burned it in the burn barrel, so that was the end of that. And I was writing books. I started writing when I was 8, and so I liked to write stories. I had quite the imagination, which didn't help when you're living with ghosts. I was scared all the time. And so anyway, when I graduated from high school, I joined the Air Force, and I was only supposed to stay in 4 years and to do a little bit of traveling. And ended up staying in for 20. And once I got out of the service, I started focusing on my writing career. So I have written 13 books, 12 of them are published, one is in the works, and 5 of those made it into, most of them made it into Amazon's top 5 bestseller list for Ghosts and Occult. Mm-hmm. You Still My Love, which was the first in my Tess Schaefer Medium series, made it to number 1 overall in the Kindle store. So I'm pretty proud of that. My book was in front of Stephen King and Anne Rice. So wow. Hey, I'll take it.
I'm not surprised. No, I'm sorry.
I had to screenshot that because that was a proud moment for me. So
that that is.
So anyway, that's why I like to write stories of stuff that interests me, and the paranormal. Interests me. I've had a lot of experiences over the years with it. You know, I do done a lot of different things. Automatic writing, table tipping is a fun activity. A little bit of channeling. So
you did channeling. You allowed yourself. You did the channeling. You allowed yourself to channel.
Yeah. But I kept it to a spirit guide. I didn't open myself up to letting, you know, anything come through. So,
So
very positive experiences with that.
Well, thank you for your service in the Air Force. I didn't want to interrupt as you were telling, but thank you. I always think my daughter was in the Navy. So I mean it sincerely. Thank you. Cause I know what the sacrifices can be. So, but you have this series now with the medium, and you have a more recent book. Is Rosemary's Ghost your most recent book in that series?
No, my most recent one is Paranormal Encounters, and that is book 8. In the Tess Schaefer Medium series. And all of those books are actually standalone stories. It's kind of nice to follow them in the series because you kind of see the progression of the character, who's a very gifted medium. But I feel like, you know, as I write her story, I learn a lot through her. You know, we get a lot of experiences together. So
I was looking at your reviews on Amazon, and somebody said exactly that they learn a lot. So how do you research that for accuracy and everything? I know you've participated in it, but I mean, how do you get it, the suspension of disbelief to where, you know, it's in the story?
Well, you know, it's interesting because when I sit down to write a book, I really don't even know. I don't know the story until I actually write it. Like with Be Similar, for instance, I just knew that I wanted to write a story about a haunted resort on the coast of Maine. That's all I knew when I sat down and started writing. Then the story just developed on its own. But when she would say stuff and I would be like, I wonder if there's anything about that, because it would just come through. I don't know where it comes from. That's why I feel like sometimes it's, you know, something, I don't know where it comes from. It just pops into my head and I just type it. And then I'm like, what? Is that true? And then I'll go on Google, and I do a lot of I get distracted a lot because I'll be writing something and then I want to go look and see if other people have done it. But you know, with the paranormal, how do you prove anything? A lot of it is just in what you believe or what you've experienced yourself. You
absolutely
know?
Yeah, so that's a big part of it. Both Bernadine and I come from those experiences. You know, my particular story is I ended up living a haunted life, a demonically haunted life, because of, you know, my mother's interest in the occult. You know, and doing things basically ignorant of the results or the, you know, the dangers that existed with it. So and then Bernadine has her own story. So but when you get that inspiration, it's like your spirit muse probably telling you. Now it's like, now so many people can claim that they're, you know, they're certified evidence and we're giving you evidence and it's on TV, you know, and it's so much of that is just just for entertainment, you know. So but Bernadine, I know you had some questions. I just want to bring you in so you could chat.
I wanted to ask you, you didn't mention why your father burned the Ouija board. Was there something bad that happened?
It wasn't because anything bad was happening, but my mom and I were just like, we couldn't wait to get, you know, we were just so fascinated with it. It was, you know, it would just tell us so much stuff and it moved so quickly. And it, our hands, we would only be able to put one hand on the planchette. I say that wrong. Because our hands would get ice cold and we'd have to sit on it, you know, our hand, warm it up, use the other hand, and just, we had to keep swapping it out. And people would come over and we'd be like, put your hand in there. You could feel the very cold air around our hand, where our hands were. We were fascinated by it, but my dad thought it was just taking up, you know, we were just getting too involved with it, I guess. But it wasn't because of any negative experience, although it did tell us that there was a bad spirit in the house, and that there was five of them in there. We got five names, and the other four were protecting us, and there was something bad in that house. And it terrorized our animals, you know, it messed with us. We lost a lot of things in that house. And we never got them back. I don't know where they went. You know, where do things go when spirit messes with them?
Into the ether. Yeah. I had a friend. Yeah. I had a friend who lived in an apartment next to me when this is going to be in something I'm writing coming out soon. And she had a bag. She just came from Walmart and had like a 5-pound bag of potatoes that she had just put in the pantry disappear. It went away. Like, nobody else was in the house. She had just put them in there and came over to see me. And then she came back over and she said, "You gonna think I'm crazy?" She's from Arkansas. She says, "My potatoes are gone." I'm like, "What?" So we looked all over. She said, you know, she looked in the car. She says, "No, I know. I brought them in and I put them right down there in the bin." 2 weeks later, okay, she was upstairs and she heard some rustling downstairs, and she had learned by now that there was something in the house, and she just like covered her head. She would see it in the morning. Well, in the morning her potatoes were back, and I told her, "Don't eat those potatoes." I mean, it was the biggest,
you don't know,
example.
Where they've been.
Right. That was the best example of, you don't know where they've been, you know, ever. I was like, I would not eat those potatoes. I don't know where. She's looking at me and I'm like, and you know, and by this time, by now, I mean, I've been researching the occult and the supernatural now for many years. And I'm telling her, I really would not eat those potatoes because I can't imagine where they were. They could have been.
And it's like, why them?
Yeah. Why? I mean, and none were missing. Like, they didn't take one or two to eat. It was just like those disappeared into the ether somewhere. So I think I would not eat those potatoes. You know, so she threw them out, which was hard to do because they were. But yeah,
it's hard to throw good food away, I know.
Yeah.
my most fascinating disappearing story in the that old farmhouse was I had a parakeet that I got for my birthday, and when I turned 13 I got a parakeet, and my mom and dad were going on a trip to Florida, and there's five of us kids and we weren't going, so we got dispersed out to family. And where I went, The friend that I stayed with, Beth, had four cats. So she said I couldn't bring my parakeet. And I was like, oh, who's going to take care of it? And so my grandfather said, well, I got to come over and feed the chickens. I'll make sure your parakeet's okay. And so anyway, he calls about 2 days after my mom and dad leave. And he says, Debbie, where's the parakeet? And I said, well, he's in the cage in the living room. He says, there's no cage in the living room. So I went over, my Beth got me in the car, and we went down there and looked. Nope, the cage was gone. It hung from a stand. Mm-hmm. And the stand was gone, the cage was gone. So they were like, well, your mom must have found somebody to take the bird. So I didn't worry about it. And then they actually ended up coming back, I think, a few days early. They actually got homesick and missed us kids. So my mom calls and she's like, well, we're home. You can come down. And we're like, well, what did you do with my bird? And my mom's like, well, what do you mean? The bird's right here in the living room. And we're like, no, it's been gone the whole time. And she's like, she thought we were pulling her leg. So we went right down there. My grandfather came over and we thought she was messing with us. And she thought we were messing with her. And so once we realized that, you know, she didn't take that bird anywhere. And we were being honest, and we never saw it. I mean, it had a full water dish, full food dish. The cage was clean. I mean, I don't know.
You don't think it went for 10 days. You didn't find evidence that it was, like, moved to another part of the house? Like the attic?
Nope.
Or something? So that would concern me. That
no, we went through. Right. No, you know, we didn't. I mean, there was no attic in that house. We went through the upstairs in the wintertime is closed off because there's no heat. There was no heat. The only heat we had was an oil stove in the living room. Mm. And we used the kitchen, a big big iron kitchen stove would heat up in the kitchen. That's all we had for heat. So we blocked off the rest of the house. And we did search the first floor. But
that's very interesting.
It's bizarre, ain't it? I mean,
it is.
He was healthy and fine. And you know what's weird about that bird is that summer, I had a dream. I started having dreams that just, you know, I would dream them and then the next day they happened. Mm-hmm. And I dreamed that my bird flew off. So the next day I was so worried about it happening that I wouldn't go near the bird. And finally it was towards the end of the day and I'm like, well, if it was going to fly off, it would have done it by now. So I went because I was trying to train it to sit on my finger. Mm-hmm. So I played with it for a little while. He sat on my finger, and then I thought I closed the cage. And just like in my dream, I was walking out the door, and I felt something flutter by my head. And I turned and looked, and there goes my parakeet.
Oh, no.
Yeah, he was gone.
So then they got the canary, and the thing took it. That's just... There's a story there. You realize? I mean, there is a story. that I feel terrible for the bird. I don't know why I just get a terrible feeling. I don't know, but they're more in touch with the unseen than we are. I mean, maybe I just I don't know. I just finished watching the Terror on AMC. I don't know if you've been watching it, but it's now turning into an anthology series. They had the first one, which was the search for the Northwest Passage, which was the British, the British ships. But now this one was Japanese people in America during World War II, and there was a demon a wandering spirit. My daughter, who is so knowledgeable about Japanese culture, has explained it up and down, but it ends up being basically a demon. And they can create their own perfect world, and this they can do it in the folklore. And this woman demon did that. And they had, the garden, there were birds and whatever they wanted in their perfect world. She was trying to get two children. She was trying to take them from the real world back to her, her perfect world, which was like somewhere adjacent to hell. This was the thing. Maybe that is where it got taken to some perfect world, and it's like in the trees or something. I don't know, but there's a story there. I would definitely write a story.
What inspired that story? you know?
Yeah,
I always wonder when I watch movies and with stuff that just makes you like,
geez, going down the Japanese.
You think that?
Well, you know, just to say, if you do watch it, it's kind of a waste of time. It had a political. I mean, just saying, if they'd have kept it like within the Japanese culture, which is so rich supernaturally, and you know, my doctor's just telling more and more and more about it, but I don't see any reason why they didn't just base the entire story in Japan during World War II. But they brought in all these elements of Latino magic, the Brujeria, and you know, the curandero, and all this other kind of stuff. It's real convoluted. And they wanted to keep making statements, you know, about America during the war. And you really didn't until like the final episode, you know, you really didn't get the full thrust of what her goal really was. And, you know, I mean, it's just plot holes and, you know, like there, I'm sorry. I mean, I'm going taking you totally on my little thing, but there was
I tell you what. I get annoyed when I finish this show and I'm like, what was the point of that? Or what were they trying to say?
As a writer, you and Bernadine, you'll appreciate this too. So I watched the whole series and the finale and all, and I was really sympathetic for the demon. She was a beautiful Japanese girl, so it was easy to be sympathetic. And it worked out good for her. But in the previous episode, there was this curandero thing about if you look at a snapshot of a person at a particular time, you could go, there was a spell or something, you could go back to them at that time and either help them out or, you know, whatever. So part of it was using these snapshots to go back. And she went to, the guy involved, the main guy, a young Japanese guy, one snapshot of a brother he didn't know he had. I don't want to give too much away in case you watch it, but he didn't know he had this brother. So for some reason, he wanted to go back to that brother to save him from the demon following him. So of course, okay, so writers go, well, why are you going to go back to this child when this thing is following you? Well, anyway, so it did. It followed him and took the child. So the picture was now a picture with nothing but, you know, the scenery in it. But here's the thing, the last episode, right? And he shows her a picture, and you can go to this time when you were happy and you had the two children and you it's still in your inside you, you know, you're pregnant, you were happy. So she does. And then I went, okay, so I'm like, this could have been better. So like I go to bed and then I sit up and I go, wait a minute. She took that other kid to her perfect world and he's still there. It's like, what about the kid in the demon's perfect world? Totally like, no reference made at the end. It was just like she took this kid and he was waiting for her to come back because there was nothing else in her perfect world but him and her and the birds and the things. And she went off to her own happy ending. And this kid is still, he's still in the perfect world. And I'm like, no, this is like midnight. I sit up and I go, what happened to Jiru? This was the kid's name. And I opened the door to my daughter's room. I was like, what about Jiru? He's still stuck in the demon's perfect world. This is, I mean, when you write, and I'm sure you can empathize with me here. When you write, it's like, what the heck did that, was that? You know, and I was worried about it. I'm like, well, what happens to him? There's ways that he could fall into a sandbox or something to do with going to the real hell. You may hear noise in the background. I have a dog and a few cats. But I was worried about it. And as a writer, that was so unsatisfying. You know, I was like, I don't know. I mean, they didn't resolve the Jiru issue. So before you watch it, just know ahead of time, it's kind of convoluted. But, you know, when you end up, I told my daughter, I was like, well, I was rooting for her. And she's like, well, then they didn't do this right. Because in Japanese folklore, these are really, bad spirits, right? These are the yokai, as she told me, is what it was. And these are not sympathetic at all. You're not supposed to feel any sympathy. Some of them are the equivalent of ghouls and everything. And I'm like, well, I like her better than anybody in the show, you know? I was rooting for her, you know? Come on, yeah. But anyway, that was a total, we went totally off the path. But, you know, as writers, we do that. You need to write the story about the bird, though. What happened to him? What his adventure You may get some answers spiritually about actually where he went. Yeah. You know
what happened? I don't know.
So that made me think of that. It's like, oh my God, your canary. he went where the potatoes were kept too.
You know? I was worried about that bird being left in there with all those spirits. So you know, it wasn't surprising something happened.
I can understand your feelings. Because now I'm sharing them. I'm worried about where the bird went. I know it's a long time ago, but, you know, yeah. Still. But anyway, let's get back on track with your life. that just reminded me of it. So now this is my quick review of The Terror on AMC. Don't watch it. Or watch it with, you know, whatever, with a grain of salt. But, you know, you must bring all these elements of your experiences and everything into your writing. Yeah. And where is, I noticed on your page, I was reading a bit, with a touch of romance. So where does the romance come in?
Well, you know, I started writing when I was 8. I was reading. I was reading all the time. And at that time, the only books I got to read were my mom's. And she would go shopping every Friday and bring back 4 of those new Harlequin books from the grocery store.
Oh, my grandma read those.
And I'd have them all read by the end of the weekend, and then I had to wait all week long for the next 4 books. And so I always thought that I would be a romance writer. And those were the stories that I was always starting and, writing was romance stories. And so I always thought that that's what I would do. And then when I wrote Be Still, My Love, which was the first book I published, it's the second book I wrote, but the first book I published, I didn't even know it was going to be a series. But what inspired me to write that was my cat died. I had been sitting writing on another story, and he had been in my lap, and he used to like to put his chin on my fingers while I was typing. And so anyway, I was typing away, and there was my cat, and he was sitting with me, and then I had to go pick up someone from work that was closing, doing a closing shift. So he wanted to go out. Well, normally I like to keep my cats in the house at night, but I let him out. But I always say a prayer, you know, for the angels to keep my animals safe when I let him outside, because we live in the woods. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, I got dressed and I, you know, got my shoes on and I got in the car and went down the road and there he was.
Oh, no.
And, you know, just minutes later, and I'm like, I don't even understand why he went all the way down to the road, but anyway, he got hit by a car and was killed. Mm. And I was very upset, and I was like, you know, I prayed for him to be safe, and you know, that didn't even last 10 minutes. And so then I got to thinking about it. It's like, you know, what does a medium do? You know, and they know that that when you die, there's you have a soul and you go into the afterlife and you don't, you know, you live on elsewhere. And so what do they feel like when something dies? And how do they feel if, you know, mediums, I would think a lot of them are very close to their, you know, spirit guides or guardian angels, whatnot. You know, do they feel betrayed when something like that happens? So that's what inspired me to sit down and start writing. I wrote a book. I was like, well, what happens if this woman lost her husband? You know, it's bad enough to lose a cat. What if you lose your husband? And you think, well, why didn't my spirit guide tell me this was going to happen? I could have saved him. And so that was the whole idea of how does a medium handle grief and handle death? And so that's what inspired that book. And I just have been going on from there. But you know, earlier you was talking about, you know, demons and having bad experiences and being terrorized. And in that house, I was scared all the time. Mm. All the time. Mm-hmm. I had one encounter where I knew the bad spirit was in the room with me. My dog was baring his teeth. He was shivering and shaking, and he was lunging at the air, which obviously something was there. Mm-hmm. And I was scared to death, but I always prayed. I was always praying for safety. I always was imagining light around me. And so anyway, my character does that. And so in my books, I started a blog and I couldn't believe I just got so, thousands of people have written to me. And they're telling me their own stories and they're all wanting help because they're all scared to death about all these experiences that are happening to them the world over.
Yeah.
Everywhere, people are having the same experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always telling them, you know, you can protect yourself because we're all spiritual beings and we all have the ability within us to keep ourselves safe from harm. And so in my books, I want my character, Tess, to help people understand how to deal with some of the experiences that occur to them.
Mm-hmm.
And how to protect themselves. And yes, there are bad things out there.
Oh, yeah.
There are bad things in the spirit world. And you have to be careful and not, you know, it's nothing to play with. You know, that's what bothers me about the Ouija board. It's put off as a game.
Yeah,
it's not a game.
One of my first experiences of seeing a supernatural tool act supernaturally was when I was 6-7 years old, moving from one house to another, and my mother put the Ouija board, which is something she bought me when I was like 6 years old, and I never liked it because, I was too young, but it never did mm-hmm. anything. And I just colored on the planchette and on the other side of the board. And I would rather play with other games. But, you know, when we were moving, whatever she had learned in the interim, I guess, she shoved it into the trash and it came. It was there before we got to the house. It was there before
oh, wow.
we got it, not in its box. She had stuffed it. The box and the planchette, she had it all in its Ouija box and she stuffed it in the trash, and everybody who was going to be with us, like to help us move, was already with us. They didn't get there early. Nobody could take it out and bring it before we got there because my dad had the keys to the house and my mama. Well, I found it and I went straight to my mama, and my mom was furious. And I thought she was furious at me. I was scared, you know, that she would be, that she would think I took it, but she was so furious. And it was later when I understood what was happening to her with things that she was starting to get interested in. I understood, you know, why she was so freaked out. You know, to me, it was like, how'd that happen? And then it took me to get a few years removed from it to say that happened. You know, I mean, I was in the house that we were now living in. And so, you know, I was always it was always on the edge that there's this danger because of the reactions, you know, that I would get. My mama started praying, you know, and mama was so mad. She took it out front of the house and accused everybody in the world of bringing it, but nobody brought it. And then she broke it in half and threw it into the trash dumpster because we had built our house ground up and it was haunted from the day we moved in. You know, it's just, it's the land, it's what you bring and all this other yeah. stuff. But, you know, luckily for me, I mean, it just never worked. I had never, but, you know, had any interest in, because I couldn't get it to work. I had other better games that were spookier and, you know, that were like just toys. But I'm kind of glad. I never really could sit that long, I guess, when I was a child and just sit still and watch, you know, stuff. Later, you know, yeah, I had my experiences. But that one experience of the way that thing behaved, it put me off of, you know, of ever really seriously yeah. wanting to use the thing again. So, you know, yeah, the when you hear about stuff from people, it's usually they've had bad encounters,
yeah.
you know, and that's how this whole paranormal, a lot of people forget. And Bernadine and I always remind them that there was an interest. I don't know how old you are, but I'm going to be 59, believe it or not. Yeah. Next month. But there was that whole first blush of interest after spiritualism. And then came the 60s, mm-hmm. there were that whole time when the Warrens made their reputation. There was Hans Holzer. There were other, you know, psychics and everything. And it was really big in the 70s. And then it kind of took that kind of curve to sort of new agey stuff for a while. Mm-hmm. And it went off into more esoteric type stuff. But my mom was interested in that whole first blush of it. So this pissed a lot of people now that are quote unquote into the paranormal think it started with Ghost Hunters, you know, on Sci-Fi Channel. It did not. This is like another incarnation, you know, like the another incarnation in the 20th century, like the third manifestation, third or fourth of interest, such interest in the occult. And my mom was among those people who were like, didn't even think twice about, should I be protecting myself? It was all, she heard from Hans Holzer himself, right? How to do recordings on cassette tapes and how to take pictures in the house. Because we went, I saw him with her. She went to his lectures and twice. And he sat there and I remember him talking about when was the best time using Polaroid film and how to record. And she just went all in with that. And that's when things just started to go off the rail at our house, you know, and it was a house that was already bad from nothing that we did.
I think when you give them attention, we were always told that when you talk to them and you start giving them attention, you actually feed their energy.
Yeah.
And so things become more active. And so, and which is what happened to us. Things got more active because we were talking to it. We were, you know, talking about it all the time. And
Bernadine, and she can tell you when we talk, we do lectures, we've gone to conventions, and mostly what we talk about is that danger, the dangers. I wrote a book about it, the supernatural dangers, you know, of exploring the paranormal that people just don't think about. Yes, I have a dog and I can hear it. Now I have another dog.
I can just barely hear it.
That's because I shut the door. She's a Doberman. She's 100 pounds almost now. So you will hear her in the background. But I was trying to flip it over to Dean because talking about how we talk about the dangers. That's why, you know, it's like it's interesting for you when you write to look into whether this is, you know, how would a medium or how would an investigator, you know, respond or do. But right, Bernadine, I mean, you've had your own experiences.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about the dangers all the time because we've been through that and we know the dark side. So we try to, you know, educate people on that because you don't see that part on TV. You don't see them educating people on the dangers of exploring the paranormal. And what I wanted to ask you, because I was just thinking, when you said your dad got rid of the Ouija board, did he feel like you, was it you and your mom doing the Ouija board, or you and a family member, did he feel like you were getting obsessed with it? Because a lot of people, even the ones that, you know, use the EVP recorder today, sometimes when they get results, you know, they get communication with the spirit, they start getting an obsession with it, and then it can turn.
I think we were
Was that before?
I think we were getting obsessed with it.
And that's why he took it away?
Well, I think he came home one day and, you know, he works and mom has dinner ready on the table when he gets home. That's how it was. And and there we are sitting at the table doing the Ouija board. So he's like, okay, that's enough of that.
Was that before you moved 2 miles down the road?
That was before we moved. Yeah. Yeah.
And they actually followed you.
Yeah,
I think another year. I think we had another year in the house.
You know, it's a good example
before we
of,
moved out.
You know, people living in a really haunted house, and then they want to do something like the Ouija board. You know, or the, there was never a time. I mean, I was up. I was 4 a.m. I was on guard. When I was sleeping, I was awake and like, you know, continuously what was in the house. And there was never a time.
I was always scared.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It was like, I don't want to sit with a Ouija board and talk to what this is. And I didn't need that to know that this was bad. I mean, it was ringing phones that were literally unplugged with a cord wrapped around them. My mama went and said a 9-day novena to St. Jude after she went to my room to aunt, because she was on that end of the house. And she went to answer a phone that was ringing and picked up the house phone because my dad had given me another line, but I had it disconnected because of the supernatural stuff. And the phone that was disconnected was the one that was ringing. So, you know, I wish she was still alive to tell you.
That happened with a radio.
Yeah.
My dad had a clock radio. That's how he'd get up in the morning because, you know, the radio station sign off at midnight and come back on at like 6 in the morning. Mm-hmm. So when it would sign back on, you know, that was his alarm. And he always had it set to a country station because he wouldn't listen to anything but country. And he got woke up one night because the radio was changing channels and going to rock station.
So he pulled
the cord out. What's that?
Spirits can manipulate electronics.
But wait,
he unplugged the radio and was there, like, there, you know, that'll fix you. And it still did it.
Yeah, and they're like,
away.
You can just almost see them, like, yeah, watch this, nudging each other, going, yeah. I mean, it's people think that you're making this stuff up. It's so unless you experience it, and it's like you've been plunged into this maelstrom of just stuff going on. Like you, small, you're a young 7-year-old, and you're living in a house that is, you know, haunted as hell in one of the, I mean, literally the oldest area of the country, New England, you know, where it goes back to 1600s, you know, with settlers and everything, you know, you just literally move into it. Same thing with me, you know, and Bernadine, when we were little, this was just what was happening, and it was life. You had to deal with it, you know, and somebody actually laughed at me in front of a whole room of people over the Ouija board story, you know, until he had his own experience, and I won't name names, but he's on TV now, but, you know, he laughed at me, ha, 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 and then he had a really, you know, life altering experience that was on, you know, they made some show about it, about his experience, I don't know, paranormal emergency or something. Anyway, you know, now he's a full believer, but he made fun of me. I mean, that people just, you're full of it, you know, that's not happening.
You know, people do, they dismiss stuff until, you know, because if they haven't had the experience, and it just sounds too out there to be true. You know, that's why it's really hard with the paranormal, unless you, but you know, more people have actually had experiences than they let on.
Right.
They just don't want to tell people. They don't want people to look at them like, oh, you're one of them.
Right. Like my,
you know, I used to be very quiet about it. I didn't used to talk to people about, because I didn't want them to, you know, I didn't want no stigma, especially in the service. But you know, I'm at this point now, like, I don't care. If you believe it or not, I know what's happened to me, and I have my beliefs, and you have yours, and you know, and
that's all
carry
you can
on
say.
From there.
Yeah, I mean, that's all you can say. And it usually, when it starts as young as we did, it follows you through life, you know, and you have ups and downs where, you know, you'll have periods of time where, you know, you're in a, I don't know, a well-balanced home, there's nothing there, and then you might move into something, you know, some other place, you know, not like you're going to stay there forever, but you experience what's happening there, and you become like a haunted, like a person is haunted, but I mean, not, sometimes it's bad, sometimes it's not. And you just have these supernatural experiences, these encounters with the supernatural, and it becomes like second nature. And then you get these, like my brother, for instance, because the house that we lived in, I'm going to be writing about. And I was like, look, I'm going to be talking about some stuff, real things that happened. And I want to put the things that you told me. And he just tells me, oh, I only told you that to scare you. I didn't know none of that was true. And I'm like, no. I'm the one who can remember in the family. And he unsolicited, like, I remember sitting there on the sofa and the general talk was about what was going on. And I was like, he actually volunteered experiences that he had had, but he had already moved out the house, you know, which didn't do well for me having to stay living in the house and still being like a teenager experiencing it. But it was some validation. And now he's like, just, he has he has selective amnesia big time, but he don't remember. But I'm like, yeah, okay. He's living in the house at Taunted. If it was able, I was able to bring Bernadine over there to prove it to him. He's in a terribly haunted house right now. And he just like, I don't believe in that. I was like, well, it believes in you. It doesn't care if you don't believe in it. You know, I mean, daddy didn't believe in it until he saw a ghost go up the hall in front of him. You know, I mean, so it's just, and then people laugh at you, you know, but one thing about what's happening with the paranormal is that, you know, there are more people willing to open up about it. And then you get,
I mean, there's so many shows on TV now. It's kind of like an accepted thing. So it's not got the same stigma, I don't think.
Yeah, it's cool.
And now more and more people are curious about it, you know?
And that's good and bad. That's good and bad because more people, like Bernadine can tell you. I mean, the precautions and everything
dabbling.
Our team takes. Yeah, the dabbling, which is where we really got together and said, you know, we really should tell these people about, you know, from the investigator's point of view and her experience. I'm speaking for you, Bernadine, but I don't mean to. But the dabblers and the ones who were like, you know, I got my jeans and my black team shirt and I'm going to the cemetery. Uh-huh. You know, and then I tell them, you know, well, guess how do you know that there wasn't some, you know, Luciferian or, you know, black left-hand path practitioner finishing up his work the night before you decide to bring everybody up in there, and they got ghouls all over the cemetery looking for something to eat on, and you up in there with your team and your voice recorders and all this other stuff. You should see their faces when they're sitting in the crowd. You know, it's like, oh my God, you know, I remember when we went after church or whatever with our cameras and our EVP, you know, whatever. And I'm like, this guy's been doing, you know, a ritual that's lasted a month, and he just manifested Lilith in the damn cemetery, and now you're in there and there are things in there that are looking for people and living stuff to feed on. You know, so it's like the gap is like, it was like, you can look at him, Bernadette and I was like, bet you never thought about that one. You know, I mean, it's really, as much as it's like opened it up, it's created a lot of dunces. You know, and they always end up coming back to people like us saying, well, I don't know what we did, or we need help, you know, we need this, what we're going to do, you know, so.
That's what I get on my blog, is people dabbling in stuff, and then writing to me, this, you know, we were just having fun, and now this is happening to us, and they're terrified, and it's like, well, it's not fun and games.
No. Playing with the
I always, when I do anything to do with the paranormal, I always try to keep it on a very positive note, and if anything starts to get negative, it's done. Stop it. I'm not into that, you know. I think that contact with the other side should be a positive and good experience, and only good things should come of it. And if negative things are coming out of it, then it's not something you should be doing.
That's right. And some people just don't get that. And there's a lot of people who don't know what the negative experience is. You know, it took me years to understand, you know, and you have to go through, in my case, the occult and, you know, voodoo and all this other stuff to finally come to understand how, in a retrospective way, how did it get that, as bad as it was? What was happening around me when I was just a kid? You know, so I could figure it out later. But Dean and I, all the time, right, Dean? I mean, this is, I guess, we're like I'm like a crotchety old woman now. Yeah, well, you're going to go in that time. It's like, you know, if I can spare somebody, you know, being possessed or some shadow entity eating them, you know, eating their soul or their spirit, then I'll risk looking like an idiot, right, Dean?
Well, if they take the advice that we give them instead of, you know, just listening to us and still doing what they want to do.
It's like, well, yeah, okay. See us now or see the asylum later. They've got a bed in the room waiting for you, you know, because nobody's going to believe you beyond us, you know. I don't mean to be lighthearted, but getting back on your path here, I imagine then that you have had experiences and encounters throughout your life. I mean, even now, continuously. How's that worked out for you?
Yeah, it happens a lot, you know, and if I get out of it for a while because I'm busy with other things, something always happens to pull me back in again, you know, especially when I joined the Air Force, you know, that consumes your life.
Yeah.
And then I've had children, and so I got very busy, but so I got out of it for a little while, even writing, and then I had my son. And when he was two, he started talking to me about when he was a man and all the things he used to do when he was a man and when he was older, and things that a two-year-old shouldn't know. And then he would ask me, well, where's my wife? I really miss her. And he'd cry because he wanted his wife. And I'm like, how does he even know what a wife is? And so I started getting right back into research and was like, what is going on? Obviously, he's remembering a past life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, how do I handle it? You know, I didn't want to shut him down, but, you know, help him through that because it was pretty intense there. But my friends were like, your son is weird.
Oh,
they were kind of scared of him. You know, he'd talk about being a man all the time. And I took him to a squadron party and he cornered my supervisor. I saw him over there and I was like, oh, my gosh, what is he talking about now? And I run over there and they're like, Deb, you didn't tell me that, you know, your son was a pilot in the Korean War. Oh, well. I was like, how does he know so much about the Korean War and being a pilot and being shot down and was talking about stuff in the cockpit? And it's like, I have no idea. You know, we were living in Germany at the time, didn't have any TV. So it's not like he could watch TV and get all that, you know. So I said, I told them, I don't know. He's got quite the imagination, but I always believe that Wes was remembering past lives. And so I got right back into it again, started reading, and every time life takes over and you're distracted, and then boom, something happens and you're right back into it. And now, of course, I'm writing about it. So, mm-hmm. you know, I live it every day now.
Did he grow out of that?
You know, he did. He did grow out of it, and I never shut him down. I would talk to him about it. You know, one day we were riding in the car, and he was two. He was a very good. He spoke really well. I left him for a year to go to Korea, and he stayed with my mom. And my mom told him lots of stories. So she talked. You know, I don't know if he just being left with so many adults. He spoke very well for a small child.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, we were riding in the car, and all of a sudden he goes, oh, Mama, I remember this place. It was when I was driving the truck with my wife, remember? And then he said another car hit him. They were in a car accident.
Oh,
and
wow.
He wanted to know if that's how she died. I know, it's crazy. I was like, oh my gosh, he's 2 years old.
Really?
He used to talk to me. I'd tuck him in at night, and he'd look really sad. So I would be like, why are you sad? What's the matter? And he'd say, I just don't want to die again. I hate it.
Lord.
I don't like being dead. And I was like, oh, stop it. Like, you're not going to die. And, you know, or he'd tell me he didn't want me to die because, you know, he just wanted me to stay with him. He was very obsessed about death, but I know it's because he was remembering. And, firm believer in past lives, reincarnation.
And the what I call soul memories, you know, is basically, I mean, we all share the same soul. It's not only the explanation for deja vu, it's the explanation for reincarnation as well. And, you know, our spirits are individuals, you know, and when they lapse over like that, that's way too heavy for a little child to invent, for one thing, or any of that. I mean, I'm glad that he passed out of it, you know, but sometimes it persists so much that you have to get mediums and everything involved to really pass the other spirits on, because that can be problematic, you know. They could repress his person. I mean, if he was an infant, let's say, you know, and it, you know, at that point, the other person wanted to live so bad, they could suppress the spirit, you know, of the newborn and all. So that's just phenomenal. I mean, I've heard of that happening, but that's spooky, you know, to the point.
Yeah.
I'm glad that he got out of it, though, in fear of
death.
Yeah,
me
and
too. He just stopped. He just stopped. And no, he doesn't remember any of that now.
Well,
so, I remember it. I remember it very well.
Of course you do. I mean, as a mother, and how do you help? You know, how do you help your child? I mean, other than listening and all, but what do you do? That's just that's wild. I don't know what I would have done. Mm-hmm. I remember I have memories of a couple of incarnations, you know, and I did some regression mm-hmm. hypnosis way back when and stuff, but just, they told me I did stuff like praying and, you know, covering my head like a nun and praying in Latin when I was like 2 and 3 years old and saying these things that were Latin prayer. I don't remember any of that. You know, but the two people that told me, I mean, my mother and my mama were just so honest. She would never make that up. Yeah. She used to have to. No. I remember I used to dress. She had a little fox terrier named Pixie. And not only did I want to dress up like a nun, I wanted to dress her up like a nun, too. And it ended up looking looking ridiculous. And then mama thought I was making fun of the Blessed Mother because I dressed the dog up, you know, and so I remember being punished for that. So I guess I was pushing out of my memory, you know. She's got very mad at me and I couldn't make her understand, but we're praying, you know, we're praying here. And so it's just weird, but nothing to the extent that you just expressed. So anyway, I'm gonna pitch it to Bernadine and bring you in. I know you got some questions.
Yes. You had mentioned that you, I don't know if you experimented or you still do it with table tipping and automatic writing mm-hmm. and channeling. Mm-hmm. For the listeners that do not know what this is, can you explain how you got into it and, you know, how do you communicate with the spirits that way?
Automatic writing, I got involved, and my kids were really young at that point. They're around the 30s now. So I had read the book, Ruth Montgomery. I don't know if you've heard of her.
Oh, yeah.
She did a lot of, yeah. So I started reading her book. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I thought, well, I wonder if I can do that. So anyway, I started, got a piece of paper and a pen. You just sit quietly and meditate, always pray. And, ask for someone to come through that I know and love. I've always asked for people that I know that love me. And as I said, I don't open myself to just anything. And my person that came through was my grandfather, my grandmother, actually, first. And I grew up with her. I was back and forth between my mom and dad and my grandparents, so I was very close with them, and so it was a very emotional experience for me to connect with her, but I didn't know if it was real. You're wondering, is this my imagination? Am I mm-hmm. making this up, or is this really her, and is she just saying things to me that I want to hear? And so anyway, I told my mom, and my mom's very open about this stuff, and so she's like, well, you know, see if you can get your grandfather. and I didn't know why she wanted me, but mom had a reason for that. And but she didn't tell me. So I said, okay, well, I'll give it a try. So I sat down one night and I just light a candle. It gives me something to focus on, kind of go into a meditative state. And I asked for Grampy to come through and talk to me, you know, and I just talk. I just start writing. I don't even ask him any questions. And then I just started writing and just writing and writing and writing. None of it made sense to me. And I'm like, what is going on here? So when I got done, I was like, gosh, because it was like, you need to tell your mother this and tell your mother that. And I'm like, if I tell my mom that, she's going to think she did something. Because it's like, tell your mom, I'm not mad at her. She did the right thing. And I'm like, I don't understand what this is all about. And I didn't want to talk to her. So she called me and she's like, well, did you do it? And yeah, did you talk to Grampy? I don't think it was him, Mom. You know, it didn't make any sense. And she's like, well, tell me what he said. And I'm like, I didn't want to, because it suggested that something had gone wrong between them. But so anyway, she kept it at me. And finally I said, okay, well, I'm just going to read it to you. And, it doesn't make any sense, so don't worry about it. So I read it to her and she's real quiet. And then she was kind of crying, and I'm like, Mom, I told you it didn't make sense. And she goes, it makes perfect sense. And she said, and I needed to hear that, and thank you very much. And I was like, what?
Wow.
What is this all about? And, you know, my grandfather had a stroke just as I joined the Air Force. I was still in training, and he had a stroke. And he had the stroke, mind you, when I called home, I called my mother to let her know that I had gotten engaged because I met my husband in tech school. And my grandfather was there, and she's like, well, Debbie, I don't want to tell your grandfather this. Call your grandmother and ask her, you know, if it's all right to tell your grandfather. So I called Nana, and while I was talking to Nana, telling her about my engagement, Grampy had a stroke.
Oh, wow.
And I called back. She goes, go ahead, call him, you know, and let him know. And so I call back, and they're freaking out, and they're like, Grampy had a stroke, and they're taking him to the hospital. And he never came out of it. So I flew home. He was in, you know, he was in coma. And, you know, I went in to talk to him, because I believe even though he was in a coma, his spirit was there to listen to me. So I talked to him. And I've always felt a little guilty about that experience. But anyway, I had to go back to the military. So I wasn't there when he actually passed away. And I always believed that Grampy just died. But I guess, you know, he was on life support and there was no brain activity. And the family was told, you know, it's done. And my grandmother, you know, had my family, my mom, was the only one that I guess would sign the paperwork to allow them to take him off life support. But she felt bad about that, making that decision. It's a hard decision to make. And so she felt bad. And Grampy was telling her it was okay, that she made the right choice and not to feel bad anymore. And
so
that was my one huge experience with automatic writing, that I just was like, wow, this is really something.
Have you ever had an experience
saying,
go ahead. I'm sorry. I thought you were finished.
Well, I mean, I just was, because you said you want to know how I got into automatic writing, and that's what, why I do that and why I believe in it, was because of that. My first experience was so positive. But the table tipping thing I did in church, we did the, you know, I joined the spiritualist church and they table tip. So, I thought they have the Thursday night thing at church where they do something different each week. And this one week was table tipping. I'd never heard of it. So I was like, what's that all about? I'm going to go. And it was a full room that night. And they had a whole bunch of little tables. And you just sit there, a few of you, and you put your hands on the top and you talk to spirit. And they tip the table. So that's why it's called table tipping. And, you know, so you do yes and no. Tip once for yes, twice for no, or vice versa, or whatever you tell the spirit. Or they tell you, you know, let us know what one yes is, let us know what no is. And so anyway, I thought, well, this is pretty cool. So I came home and I told my husband, and my daughter was here, and I said, hey, I just learned this table tipping thing. Let's give it a try. So we pulled out a little table and we sat there and put our hands on it, and we're, you know, asking something to come through, and it shimmied, but it didn't move any. And then all of a sudden, something knocked on our window. Bang, 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 four times. Four loud, strong knocks. Scared the heck out of us.
And
the table didn't tip.
And you didn't tip a table in that house again, right?
Well, we did, just not that night. But later on, we have done it. But you know what? To me, it's a lighthearted thing. We talk to people. We talk to loved ones only. We've only brought loved ones through for the most part. You know, we get hugs. They come and tip to us and hug us. And you just feel like you've visited a family member that's in spirit. And it's a very beautiful, loving thing. I had one instance with the table tipping where I had a stranger. I didn't know her. She joined the table with me and my aunt. There was four of us, and I didn't know. She asked me to try to bring this one person through. So I asked for this person, and he came through and tipped the table, and she started crying. And I said, I thought she was just being emotional that, you know, this loved one was there. And then she goes, well, does that mean he's dead? And so I went, I said, well, I think, yeah, usually. And
yeah, but
so I said, what do you mean? Mm-hmm. I mean, not, well, no, but I mean, I had an experience trying to talk to somebody alive. We, that's what we were all doing in the room that day. We were talking to the loved ones who had passed over. And so then she told us that this, her neighbor, a good friend of hers, he had Alzheimer's, had left the house and was lost. They couldn't find him. Mm-hmm. And he had been missing. And mm-hmm. so he came through on the table. So she wanted to know where he was. And he told her he was in the woods. In the path between their house, that he had wandered off the path, and he told her that he was, you know, he had was by a log, you know, and so anyway, we told her, you know, don't try to go find him,
right,
yourself, and but she did. She went home, I guess, went walking in the woods, got a little lost, and her son had to come find her, but she did not find him.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like a year later, some hunters were in the
found
woods
him.
And they found him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
that was.
She was not meant. She was not meant to find him. Yeah. Now.
No, not her.
That it's a shame. I mean, in my memory, I remember seeing a billboard every day going to work where this man walked out. And we live down, I'm in Louisiana, and you don't have to walk far to walk into a swamp, you know. And they had a big billboard that he had Alzheimer's. He was lost if anybody saw him or knew anything. And he just walked out of his house one day and never came back, you know. So, and some people try to.
Did they ever find him?
No, never. And because what's in swamps, alligators and stuff like that. He just he went off walking. They had like a neighbor saw him heading in a direction that a lot of people in that neighborhood would go when they were just walking, like they would walk the circuit of the neighborhood. So they didn't think anything really of it. Didn't know too much intimately, I guess, about how bad his Alzheimer's had gotten or whatever. And they just thought he was walking, you know, taking a walk, walked away. Never found again. I guess
it's
I would say, yeah,
you don't get closure, you know, when stuff like that happens.
No,
you know?
I mean, eventually, I don't know, you know, maybe they'll turn. They didn't suspect foul play. He just took a walk and never came back from it, which is so frightening, you know. That happened to one of the person, a cousin to our family. Well, my cousin was on the New Orleans Police Department. She worked like the graveyard shift, and she happened to go home a certain way that was right past the old neighborhood, and she saw her name was Miss Lucy walking up the street in a bad neighborhood, 4 o'clock in the morning, and she pulled over. And I mean, this was like, you know, being there at the same time that Miss Lucy was walking at the exact same time and her seeing her, recognizing her, she pulled over and she's like, what are you doing? What are you walking? You're walking around. It's 4 o'clock in the morning. And she didn't know really about the Alzheimer's and all. She took her back to her house. It's like people, you know, people who care for people with Alzheimer's, they feel they don't want to treat them like children, you know, like, oh, you know, where are you going, you're moving, you know, they don't want to be like that. They don't know how to be a lot of the time, so they want them to have as much independence as they have. But it's like, you know, seeing stuff like that, you know, when as soon as it begins where they get disoriented and they don't know, even if they're in their own home, I mean, just to say, because if Tammy had not, my cousin had not seen her, I don't know what would have happened. They would have, I mean, she'd have gone off into really bad areas, but even, and this was a while ago, then they were bad then. But have you ever had a negative experience? In other words, a spirit claiming to be somebody and then it turns out that they're not, or, you know, something where it was just like you knew it was something negative and they were trying to fool you?
I have not. I have not had any negative experiences with automatic writing, with the Ouija board, channeling, none of that. I have not personally. Now, I showed my aunt how to do the automatic writing, and she was, you know, I showed her, and then I went overseas. I went to Italy, and I had a strong feeling one day. I was like, I got to call home. I don't know why, but I just feel like I need to call home. You know, we didn't have cell phones then. Mm-hmm. So I find a phone booth, and I called home, and my mom's like, oh my gosh, thank God, I've been sending you mental messages to give us a call. And she's like, you know, your aunt was talking, she said that she thought she was talking to my Nana, to her mother. Mm-hmm. And she said when she first started the experience, it was very loving and it was a very positive, good experience. But then one day she's talking, and it was telling her bad stuff, saying terrible things was going to happen. And then she got really scared. And so my mom's like, well, why do you think your grandmother's saying all those horrible things? I'm like, Mom, that is not Nana.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, she is talking to a bad spirit and she needs to stop.
Yeah.
And she didn't do it anymore after that. But you have to be careful.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, you say you go around and you tell them, you know, you're giving lectures and telling people you really need to be careful when you're dealing with the spirit world.
Yeah, because there's
lots of stuff over there wanting to come through.
Right. Something that spirits can do, and we talk about this a lot, Bernadine and I, is that they can take the shape and form of anybody, you know, that's in your mind. You know, and you say, oh, you wake up and, you know, you've been using the Ouija board and trying to get Uncle Joe, and you wake up one night and there he is by the bed and he looks like Uncle Joe. And then you say, Uncle Joe? And he'll say, yeah, I'm Uncle Joe. You have no idea who that really is. You know, I mean, especially mm-hmm. if you name it, that's almost akin in a way to naming a voodoo doll. And naming it someone's name and then doing stuff to it. It's like you give it the name. You always, I mean, this is biblical too. I mean, test the spirit, but that you always test the spirit. If you're that kind of person, if you're somebody like you who wants to interact with the spirit world all the time, I've had enough of interacting with the freaking spirit world. I would rather just tell people, look, you know, this is what happened to me, my cautionary tales. I mean, it still happens, but I've had enough of, like, mm-hmm. you know, waking up and seeing things at the foot of my bed. Thank you. I don't want, but it's, you know, you have to test and you have to know, because there are so many spirits that are clinging close to the living, you know, because they don't want to go yeah. through the death process. There are some that right. have been out. There are some human spirits that have been out there so long that they're indistinguishable from devils and demons. These are the devils, you know, that we experience mm-hmm. that do the evil things. And you just don't know. It's not called the outlaw country for no reason. It's like, you know, you don't know if that's they have a way of picking up the discarded shells of, you know, our dead and mimicking them. And that's how, you know, they come into our lives, and they cause, you know, they cause so much grief and worry, and, you know, and interestingly enough, my mother's whole problem began because her grandfather died at when she was about 10 years old, and she loved him. She really, really loved him. And all of her life, she always wished that she could get in touch with him or talk to him. And so her, mm-hmm. her interest in the supernatural happened for a very loving reason. It happened in grief, you know.
It often does.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then,
I
like,
think it does.
And then some people are, you know, that's how they get mired in, like she did, into, you know, oh, you can get him this, you can go this way. Look, I mean, I could go on and on about the stuff that, the things she did, seances and, you know, all this other stuff, trying to talk to spirits, talk to his spirit. And, you know, I ended up getting a lot of the burnout. I mean, she died early. She died at 59. She did have brain cancer, but she mm-hmm. she had so many other illnesses that just came, that were just unexplainable and inexplicable. And I know that that's helped put her in the grave. You know, it dug the grave, basically. And, you know, so it's really, that's why, you know, it's, you have to be really cautious. I can't endorse mm-hmm. table tipping a Ouija, all that. You're obviously doing it safe and you feel safe. I can't say everybody could go do it, because they're not going to have your experience. You know, they're not going to, they don't have the
right.
knowledge, the for knowledge
sure.
base that you have.
No, and I tell
it's
people
just playing
to stay,
with fire.
I tell people that don't play with the Ouija board. Don't play with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I do not tell people to, you know, yeah, sure, go play with that thing.
If I'd have seen you playing with a Ouija board at 7 years old in a haunted house, I'd have taken that thing away too. Right?
Well, I wasn't. I was 14.
Oh, okay.
When we started doing
all right.
That.
Okay.
It was the year before we moved out, so So, no, at that young age, I don't know if we even knew. I don't know. I'm sure it was around, but
6 years old, I was still playing with Light Bright and stuff. And I'm like, what is this? The most boring toy ever. What am I supposed to do with this? You know, I mean, so people don't buy your kids these toys and stuff. It's just, but me, I'm like, I had another toy that I often talk about. It was called the Mystical Kabbalah or something like that. And it was this green board and it glowed in the dark. And they had these little dungeon things. Like you had to move your little marker and you spun this, like, it was the Kabbalah and it had like an eye in the middle of it and you moved your marker. And then if you had to reach into the dungeon, you might like a gummy, they had like a, you know, the rubber worms or feathers or spiders, you know, I was like, that was more interactive. Ouija, you know, I mean, I would have the planchette and draw on it while I was watching the monkeys or something. Yeah. You know, it was just with crayon, you know, what am I supposed to do with this? Poked out the piece of plastic and like, well, what is this? You know? And so it went in the trash, but I guess it had plans of its own, you know, it wanted to be with me or us. So, but anyway, we're almost up. What's coming up for you? We're almost up for time here. We have just a few more minutes. So what do you have planned? Do you have some other books coming?
Well, I have my book 8 in the Test Shaper Medium series is in the works. My editor has it right now. I'm hoping to have the ebook ready by Halloween, but I'm not sure about that. So, but it's called Spirit Matters, and it's the continuing saga of Tess and her sidekick Cade. Mm-hmm. And so that's where the romance comes into play.
Well,
I have to put a little bit of romance in there because, you know, I'm a romantic at heart. So,
Bernadine is telling me, she just messaged me that she lost her signal. I'm like, oh my God, I thought she was there.
Oh no.
I was about to pitch to her. So it's just been you and me. You didn't know that, how the magic of radio. Well, what I was going to say is we would love to have you back sometime in the future. You know, don't wait for publishing a book. I'll have Bernadine get in touch with you to have you back. But if anybody wants to find
it, it's fun.
Yeah. And I honestly, I hadn't seen your books until Bernadine got you on the show here. So I'm going to check them out. And I was looking on your Facebook page. Check them out and see what's going on. So I'll be buying some of those.
I'd be curious to know what you think.
I'll let you know. I'll be honest.
Good or bad, doesn't matter. I'm always criticize. Open to critique.
Well, some people say, no, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding you. No, I will. I am going to check it out. I mean, I just wanted to let you know that I hadn't heard of the series or anything. So now I'm very interested in it. So if anybody's looking for your blog or to get in touch with you, I know you're on Facebook. Do you have a website?
Yeah.
And how would you like, if anyone wants to get with you?
Well, they can reach me on through my blog. And I think there's links to my Facebook and Twitter on my blog, which is deborahjhughes.com. So,
all right.
It's my name. My
phone. And then you
you do
have those links on your Facebook page as well. Well, thank you for visiting. It's been really, it's been mind blowing.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Yeah.
I was so excited to get your message and I was like, oh my gosh.
It wasn't that bad, was it?
No, you made it easy. Thank you very much.
Very easy going. We don't follow any, you know, whatever. We go off and talk about anything, but yeah, we're looking forward already to having you back. But I want to thank you again for being here and wish you a happy Halloween, by the way.
Thank you. Same to you.
Yeah. And we'll be talking to you again in the future. So, but
I look forward to it.
Good. Well, good luck and have a great weekend and we'll talk to you soon.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. You take care.
Deborah, good night.
All right. Good night. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, folks, we lost Bernadine somewhere in there. Jump ship. She said she lost her signal. She'll get it back at some point. But anyway, you've been listening to the Supernatural Substation on the United Public Radio Network and iHeartRadio Partner. You can find the UPRN archives anywhere that the archives are broadcast. So be sure to follow the Supernatural Substation. Follow the darkness on Facebook. We have a Supernatural Substation page on Instagram, on Tumblr, and elsewhere, wherever you may be. Stay tuned for Miss Kathy Bilski. You're going to get high and take a quantum leap, and stay tuned at 2 a.m. for Dark Ambient Radio Terminus. Get scared, stay up, get creeped, and watch out for the ghosts while you're there. Be on guard. You never know. Have a great weekend, folks. Those of you in the path of the storm, stay dry. Enjoy Halloween. We'll be back next Friday with a big Halloween show. So be sure and tune in then. Good night.